And now, in conversation with the boyhood heroes who became his broadcasting colleagues, this is My Radio 1 with Sean
Tilley. From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s and 80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I've been introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1.
Sean Tilley.
My Radio 1. Sean Tilley.
With Sean Tilley.
And this, I have to say, is one of our most eagerly awaited editions ever. This iconic theme means we know who it is instantly.
Number 20, Love's Theme from the Love Unlimited Orchestra. 19, The Wombling Song from The Wombles. 18, Teenage Dream, Mark Bolan and T-Rex. And 17 is Living for the City from Stevie Wonder. 16, My Cuckoo, Alvin Stardust. 15, Teenage Lament 74, Alice Cooper. And 14, Devil Gate Drive, Susie Quattro. 13, Love and a Mountain Top, Robert Knight. 12, How Come, Ronnie Lane. 11, Radar Love, Golden Earring. And 10, Forever, Roy Woods. Nine, All of My Life, Diana Ross. Eight, You Won't Find Another Fool Like Me, The New Seekers. And 7, The Show Must Go On, Leo Sayer. 6, Rock and Roll Baby, The Stylistics. 5, The Man Who Sold the World, Lulu. And 4, Solitaire, Andy Williams. 3, Dance with the Devil, Cozy Powell. And number 2 is Teenage Rampage from the Sweden. That's all from me, Tom Brown. So until next Sunday at 4, here's this week's
number 1.
And Mudd's Tiger Feet was the first ever single that I bought with my own pennies. When I was hanging on to every word uttered by this man each Sunday tea time. So it's a great thrill in that case for me to finally be able to say, Tom Brown, welcome to My Radio 1.
Sean, how very kind of you to have me on your program.
Now, I know that you came from a classically trained acting background, but it was your love of folk music which ultimately led to a career in broadcasting. Is that right?
There was a boat in Kingston-on-Thames called the Jazz Boat. And I went down and saw the owner, and they had jazz on a Saturday night, you know. And I said, why don't you have a folk night? And he said, well, no one's ever asked. And so Thursday nights we used to do folk music. And all these people used to come down to it. I was astonished. And we used to go up on a Saturday night. Myself and a couple of other guys would go to Wimbledon and take the tube up to Earl's Court.
Yeah.
And we'd go to this place called the Troubadour, which was run by an American who was very much into folk music as well, only he was into Pete Seeger, you know, and Woody Guthrie and those folk guys.
Hmm.
Then we now switch onto another track, and we come into theatre.
Right.
There was a guy called Michael Croft. Now, Michael Croft was a teacher at Dulwich College, and he had the idea that the best way to teach kids Shakespeare was that the kids should act it, that they should actually do it. And Croft decided to take this on tour. And we went to Belgium, and we went to Holland, and we went to Denmark with this modern dress production of Julius Caesar.
Hmm.
And in Denmark, I went down to a folk club, which was in the town centre, the city centre, and met a guy called Dave Cousins.
Oh, the
Dave
Strokes.
Cousins had the Strawberry Hill Boys.
That's right,
back in
yeah.
Hounslow. And Dave was playing a banjo at that time, and he was a very brilliant banjo player. But we became great friends. So we got this sort of parallel thing about, you know, is it folk music or is it acting?
Yeah.
And so I auditioned for RADA, and I, to my amazing surprise, I got into RADA.
So that's how it
and,
happened.
When I'd finished RADA, I decided that I wanted to before I settled down to be an actor, I wanted to go and try and see if I could be a professional folk music singer. So I'd loved Copenhagen, I'd loved Denmark. I went back to Denmark and saw Dave again. Dave was still out touring, you know. But this time he was by himself. And I had met a guy at the British Council who wanted someone to go around the Danish high schools, the gymnasiums, and sing English, Irish, and Scottish folk songs. So I said, OK, well, I'll do that for you. And then I went out on this tour. Along the way, I met, because we would stop, sometimes they'd say, oh, there's a folk club in our town. So we'd go down, we'd hear all the people, and maybe I'd sing a couple of songs. And I met a lot of other guys who were singing at these clubs. And back in Copenhagen, three or four of us were asked to go down to the radio station one day, Danmarks Radio, Danish radio. We went down, we recorded some songs, yeah, and for a program. And then we're sitting up in the canteen. And a guy called Benny G. Jensen, came over and he said, what do you do? And I said, oh, we're singers, we're English. We're over here to do some folk songs for you. And he said, oh, how interesting. He said, it's such a pity we don't have a folk music program on Danish radio. And I said, well, I'll do one for you. And I put together a program. And we called it Hootenanny. And this was every week.
Yeah.
We would do this folk music program. And when I couldn't find a song, I'd sing it myself.
Wonderful.
I suddenly had to go to Benny G. Jensen and say, look, Benny, I'm terribly sorry, but the folk music records are drying up. The interest is the Beatles. Yeah. The interest is the Rolling Stones. I don't have enough to make you a half-hour folk music program. Yeah. And he said, all right, we'll do a pop program.
Yeah.
And I said, but Benny, I know nothing about pop music at all. I'm a folk singer. He said, well, find somebody who does.
Right.
So I got on the phone to Dave Cousins back in Hounslow, and I said, Dave, look, how about if you wrote the program and I'll just speak it, you know, whatever you write. And Dave and I started to do this program. We called it The London News. And the way we managed to do it was because of international relations at the BBC. And under the radio conventions, you could be a foreign correspondent. Even though I was a Brit, I was officially a Dane. And I was using BBC studios. I was using BBC facilities. I was using the BBC record library.
And here it is, the last time up, the Pick of the Pops.
Talk about being in the right place at the right time. That's how, presumably, you've got the golden opportunity out of nowhere to replace one of the most loved Radio 1 DJs in an equally famous weekly slot.
One day, I'm in the record library.
Yeah.
And this guy called Johnny Beerling walks in. And he said, I've seen you in here before. What do you do? And I said, oh, I work for Danish radio. Mm. We do a pop music program. I said, but I don't write it. It's written by Dave Cousins. And Johnny sort of looked at me and said, okay. And then a few weeks later, he asked me would I come in and talk to him.
That's
said,
how it okay. happened, yeah.
And he said, look, Alan Freeman is going to stop, and we need a guy to take over from Alan Freeman on the Top 20. And
wow.
I said, oh, right, all right. And he said, what I want is Casey Kasem. And he played me this tape of this American guy who did the American Top 20.
Casey's Coast to Coast.
And the countdown continues.
Number four. Here's a group that's mostly from Florida singing about California. It seems there are these 73 guys who just keep cruising up and down the San Francisco Bay. Here's Blues Image.
I said, but Johnny, there's no way I can do this guy. You know?
Did you?
I can just do what I do with Dave. I'll just read it for you.
Yeah.
So I was asked in to do an audition.
Brilliant.
And I chucked out some ideas. You know, I said, well, look, why don't we go five, four, three, two, one, boom. We have liftoff. So there was little things like that. And then I said, when we have a record going up, we could have a racing car going.
And Elvis goes up from 13 to
number 10.
And then other sounds going down.
And the Osmonds drop one place from 3 to
number 4.
And then Johnny said, I think you should meet Fluff. That was Alan Freeman. And I you know, Freeman for me was a god. I was terribly shy to meet him. I thought, here's this guy who's been doing the program for 15 years.
Well, nearly.
He's never, ever missed a program, even when he was in New York.
That's right.
And now this snotty kid's going to come in and take over from him. I mean, I wouldn't have been welcoming at all. But Fluff was sweet. He was absolutely kind, incredibly professional. He said, well, now you do this, this, and this, and then you'll find that the signal comes in and you turn this, because we were using Gates decks, the things that the pirates used on the ships, because they were the best decks that you could have, record decks. And he more or less showed me all the ropes how to do it.
Next Sunday at 4, that's Tom Brown and Solid Gold 60.
Then we started to do this program, which was not really just the top 20. It was the BBC playlist for the week. All these producers would sit down and listen to all the new records that were coming out.
Yeah.
And then this program was called Solid Gold 60. Mm. And for 2 hours, they would play what the playlist was going to be, followed in the last hour by the top 20. One of the reasons that I accepted Johnny's offer to do the Solid Gold 60 was that I simply couldn't make enough money as an actor.
Yes, tomorrow afternoon on Radio 1, Tom Brown introduces Solid Gold 60, 3 hours' worth of the best 60 singles, including the new top 20, starting at 4 o'clock.
Radio 1. Station.
And that's
number 18.
First week in the top 20 for Pizza Scullin, You're a Lady.
I made cock up after cock up. I mean, it was just, you know, I was absolutely useless on the first one.
And up from number 18 to number 16, thank you, Suzanne, Beware of the Devil, Dandy Livingstone.
When we closed the mic after the very first top 20 program, that's after the very first Sonic Girl 60, I simply had to lie down on the floor. I couldn't get up. And I think Beerling had to pour about half a bottle of Johnny Walker down me to get me to stand up again, because I was so absolutely shattered with nerves after doing the first program. It wasn't ever as bad as that again, but the very first one was it nearly wiped me out. I could not function after that first program.
Tom Brown, Sonic Girl 60.
And at
number 13.
I do that wrong. I get the sweetest feeling from Jackie Wilson. I get that right one day too.
Johnny then paved the way for a bunch of other highly respected Radio 1 producers that you were working with every Sunday.
Beerling, bless his heart, couldn't stay there forever, so then I would have Bernie Andrews. Well, Bernie Andrews was wonderful. He was probably the top producer at the BBC.
That's all from me, Tom Brown, and my producer, Bernie Andrews, till next Sunday at 6.
And I had Dave Price, I had Peter Zima. But Bernie was absolutely astonishing. He was so professional and so good. And he was a great pal with Kenny Everett. Well, Kenny Everett was my god. I mean, Kenny Everett, for me, was the greatest British DJ ever.
Yeah.
And Kenny lived just up the road from Broadcasting House.
Of course.
Portland Place. Mm. And he would come into the studio of a Sunday afternoon.
Is that right?
And sit. I'd be playing the records and doing the spiel. Yeah. And Kenny would be just sitting down beside the console on the floor. And I said, I can't believe this. I've got Bernie Andrews outside. I got Kenny Everett sitting on the floor of the studio, listening. He was listening to all the new music, you see. So it was one way to listen to music. Oh, he was amazing. Kenny was absolutely superb.
At this point, ladies and gentlemen, I shall have to say goodbye. Because I've come to the end of the show. In fact, I've come to the end because that's all I'm doing for the Beeb. It's been wonderful being with the BBC. All those portals and corridors and typists and portals and corridors and producers. I'll have to run through me old producers, you know, because I owe them a debt of honour or something, and they've looked after me and stopped me from saying. And such stuff like that stuff, you see. Like Angela Bond, who was my first producer for many years. She was great, old Ange. Hello, Ange. How are you, love? She stopped me from saying a lot, too. Then there was Teddy Warwick, who's produced me right up to this day. Hello, Ted. Him and Derek Chinnery, you see, folks, are the two most powerful producers in the Beeb. When they say something, the earth rumbles, the heavens darken, and before you've got time to skin the gunge off your cocoa, someone's wheeling you off to casualty with fractured nerve ends. For, to those two power maniacs, I'd like to say goodbye. Thanks for having me, kids. And to all the people at the BBC, it's ta-ra.
I didn't really know many of the DJs apart from Kenny Everett. Dave Simmons I knew. Dave Simmons was an extraordinary guy. He used to ring up the these obscure radio stations in Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia. And he would just say, this is the BBC calling. Can you tell me your top 10 records this week? And you know, he could hear on the telephone feet running down the corridor at the other end of America and saying, got this guy from the BBC on the line. And back would come this DJ who'd probably just come off air. And Dave would say to him, well, what are your top 10 records? And the guy would read them out and Dave would write it down and say, thank you. And recording all of this all the time. So he got the American DJ's voice. Then he put the phone down and he'd ring New York to the BBC office in New York and say, could you send somebody out around to Tower Records on Broadway and buy this record, this, and this? And they'd be sent over in the BBC pouch in the next day.
That's great.
And I said to him, but Dave, you know, have you got authority? Have you got permission to do all this? He said, no, of course not. He said, I just use the phone, I talk to the guys, I record it, and then BBC sends the stuff over. So he had all these records that no one had ever heard of by these incredible black artists, these amazing blues records that had been the hit record in Mobile, Alabama. And he was playing it on his R&B show.
My name's Dave Simmons, if you didn't know already, and we have a fine show going here this afternoon, up until 6:30, playing mainly soul, because there's a lot of soul I have to catch up on that I haven't heard in this country, because it's been coming out of my ears in America. More about that later. Before I run down the singles chart in America, a word about B.B. Birdbrain Davis, whom I stayed with in Shreveport, Louisiana, way down south in Dixie, a couple of weeks ago. Instead of a phone call this week with the top 10, we'll be playing some of B.B.'s music as he played them on his show when I was a guest on his show, so stand by for that.
Right, so here you are every week. You're hosting one of Radio 1's top three most listened to shows. The whole nation is glued to you every Sunday evening. So did Top of the Pops ever come calling and ask you to host the show?
No. They didn't know who the hell I was.
Really?
You see, You needed a Noel Edmonds. You needed these very overt...
I know what you mean.
What shall I say? Showman. I wasn't a showman at all. I was just, you know, a voice on the radio. That was all.
Radio 1 will be back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock with the Noel Edmonds Show.
Speaking of Noel, we've dug deep to find this clip from the Radio 1 archive. You'll enjoy this, Tom, because you're obviously flexing your supreme acting muscle here, albeit hamming it up slightly alongside him and Paul Burnett in the network's 1974 Christmas panto. Let's have a listen.
Now, empty your pockets, dummy. I steal from the rich and I give to the poor. My name is Dennis Hill, Robin Hood. And you are all my prisoners. Now empty your pockets.
But Robin, I am but a poor, impoverished BBC employee.
You also overact. Clap him in irons, little John.
Yes, Robin. Robin? He's got something concealed up his left trouser leg.
What is it, little John?
Well, it's a sort of gun with Radio Times written on it.
See if there's anything interesting in the magazine.
No, it's quite empty.
Yeah. It's definitely the Radio Times.
It all sounds as though you're getting along quite nicely there.
Yeah, he'd come in on his helicopter every now and again, and we got on very well. Noel always wore a suit. He was very, very well turned out. I was using jeans and a T-shirt, but I like Noel. He was great. He was a showman. Noel was a proper showman. And
absolutely.
I came from a completely different, I don't say background. I came from a different angle. Mm. And it was fascinating for me to observe all these guys.
I bet it was, yeah.
David Lee Travis is exactly the kind of guy I'm talking about. He was terrific at what he did. He was wonderful. You know, he was this huge, larger-than-life character. I was never larger-than-life.
And don't forget, you can hear the brand-new Top 20 First each Tuesday on the Dave Lee Travis Show at 12 noon on Radio 1. The golden lungs of Dave Lee Travis and Paul Burnett disguised as Larry Lingo and the Dipsticks.
Every single one of these Radio 1 DJs was a household face as well as a household voice, including the man who kick-started it all, Tony Blackburn.
Tony I liked enormously. Yeah. And we used to go down to the Swiss Centre in Piccadilly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the food was very good there. Yeah. And he was having big trouble at the time with his various relationships.
Yeah.
And we would commiserate and talk. But Tony had a very nice, quiet side to him.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, what he did in front of the microphone was an act. You know, he was this great flamboyant character with all these gags, appalling gags. But I liked him enormously. We got on very well together, as it were, off mic.
Bumper to bumper time around a round table, just absolutely littered with bodies.
Unfortunate phrase.
Who are you calling rubbish?
Calling rubbish, yeah.
Tony Blackburn, welcome to the round table, Tony.
Hello, I'd just like to apologise for the promotion that we've been doing on this programme.
That's Tony there, appearing on the last ever edition of Roscoe's Round Table, and you would be a regular guest on that as well.
Mike Pasternak was, you know, we'd sit in the canteen sometimes and chat. He was the son of Pasternak, the director.
That's right.
Mike, and, you know, his stage name was Emperor Roscoe, but... we would just chat away.
Tom Brown, I believe, is on the phone, calling in from Denmark. Are you there, Tom?
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Welcome. How's your top 20 doing in Denmark?
Fine, thanks. It's cold and wet here, but, Mike, I just wanted to say I hope it's sunny and bright for you in Los Angeles when you get there.
You're very kind indeed, Tom.
Mike, I've written a little poem for you as a farewell sentiment from me.
Yes?
I'll let you have it with both ears.
All right.
Oh, Mr. Roscoe, what shall we do without no testifying great Casaboo? Mercy, Mr. Percy, is gone forevermore. No hallelujah, sakatuya, or motor racing roar. So here's to good old Roscoe, the loudest in the land. Stand up and take a mighty bow, you mighty, mighty man.
Oh, wow. I would say that that is the voice that launched 1,000 commercials. And with that, Tom, I give you your award for your contributions to the roundtable as the voice of the voiceovers. Many thanks indeed.
I really in the past, Gov.
Take care, then. Here come the originals just for you. Down to Lovetown on Tamala.
Roscoe wasn't the only American DJ at Radio 1. There was Paul Gabaccini counting down the US chart the day before you on a Saturday.
Well, I suppose it had to come. The Radio 1 movers are finally here. There goes the Roscoe Bell. There goes my copy of Frampton Comes Alive. Oh, there goes my jingle. I hope you'll join us at our new home next week. It'll be at noontime Saturday. The exact same program, with a different chart, of course, but the same disc jockey and the same format. That'll be here next Saturday afternoon at lunchtime. In the meantime, last week's number one is this week's number two. KC?
Gambo is a very professional American. He was, how can I describe this? He was an academic.
Yes.
Who was really into the music and all the stories behind the music and the history of the music. I mean, he was an encyclopedia. He was
definitely
extraordinary.
Yeah.
He was probably the brainiest guy at the BBC, mm-hmm. at Radio 1. Because he knew all this, he knew his music forwards, backwards, and sideways. I didn't know anything, but Gambo did. Wow, you know, you want to get a question about some obscure record from 1969, and he knew all the answers. Amazing.
Kenny Rogers. At number two, God Save the Queen from the Sex Pistols, and before the number one, here's a rundown of this week's top 20.
But the charts were changing, and definitely, I think it's fair to say, in your case, as top 20 presenter, not for the better, sort of late 76 through 77. And although you didn't have to play them initially, you did eventually, a certain band by the name of the Sex Pistols.
I was horrified by the Sex Pistols, I really was. But what I didn't realise,
yeah.
Was that it was Vivian Westwood.
That's right.
Behind Malcolm McLaren. Vivian Westwood, you know, had this shop in the King's Road called Sex.
Easy.
Which had all this sort of rubber things in it. And she was, you know, it was making money hand over fist. She was very, very clever. Malcolm McLaren, I talked to in New York, and he was just an ordinary guy. Very intelligent, but it was Vivian Westwood who was the the Eminence Grise behind it, who was pushing it and directing it.
Yes.
That's the word I would use.
Mm-hmm.
So she was very, very clever, very clever. But McLaren would produce the records because he was the musical talent. But I was horrified by this. It was awful. Couldn't stand it.
6 weeks in the charts for Olivia Newton-John, and the Sex Pistols are still at
number seven.
And this enormous chart success that punk was now having was largely down to the only DJ on Radio 1 who could actually play that music on the network for a while, and that was John Peel.
Peely was terrific. I used to meet Peel. Sometimes I go with the Straubs down to where they were performing, you know, at some music festival or Glastonbury or wherever they were doing. And Peel was always the MC at these events. And he would come along and marshal the troops, you know, and say, right, you're on in 10 minutes, you know, come. Yeah. And Peely and I would sit by the side of the stage and watch him performing.
Mm.
I had a lot of time for John. He was a sweet man. He was and dedicated, too. He really wanted to push and promote groups that no one had ever heard of, you know. You know. They were so obscure and left field that, I mean, nobody knew them. And Peel would play these guys and sound like he really liked them. I mean, I couldn't understand half of what I was listening to, but Peel genuinely loved this bringing new musicians, new groups to the radio and bringing them fame. Peel was very good like that. I don't think I could have had his patience.
And you weren't just fronting the top 20. There was your much-lauded interviews, too. Not least with ABBA.
One proudly presents the ABBA Special.
Happy memories of meeting Benny Bjorn, Frida and Agnese?
Benny was magnificent. He was so pleasant and kind and thoughtful. And his perfect English, of course. I mean, most Danes and Swedes have got this incredible gift. I mean, I would fly into Copenhagen some days and people had heard the top 20 coming in from London on long way. I was
wonderful.
Amazed.
Yeah.
But Benny knew it, and where ABBA was so clever was that they refused to go out touring. They just said, no, we're going to make music videos in Stockholm.
Yeah.
So every song, Waterloo, whatever the heck it was, they would make a video and send the video to the BBC. So Top of the Pops had to play the video. They couldn't get ABBA, but they got the music video. And that was the whole secret of ABBA, this recording constantly of the music videos. And that's how they became so huge worldwide.
Here are some statistics about the group. They've had 4 number one hits in Britain. Their greatest hits LP has been in the top 5 best-selling LP charts since May and has grossed more than £3 million worth of sales. Worldwide, they've sold 27 million singles and 12 million albums. And now to ABBA themselves. My Swedish is appalling, so I'll ask you to introduce yourselves. First of all,
Björn Ulvaeus.
Björn.
Benny Andersson.
Benny.
Agneta Fältskog.
Better name is Annie. Oh, Anna. Good.
Annifrid Synny Lyngstad.
Annifrid Lyngstad, better known as Frida.
Yes.
Right, so that's what I call you from now on. Okay, next up, I should say, is Dancing Queen.
I also remember a special that you recorded with the Stylistics, and also these chaps.
Hello there. Radio 1 proudly presents in 2 programmes the members of Queen, talking about themselves and their music. Queen, as they are now, were formed in February 1971 and have become one of the most successful rock acts in the world, with over 6 major albums and 10 hit singles. Well, let me introduce you now to the members of Queen. First of all, vocalist and piano player
Freddie Mercury.
On guitar and arranging and writing,
Brian May, I'm here.
On drums
and occasional vocals, Roger Taylor, here.
Welcome, Roger. And on bass and electric piano,
John Deacon.
Right. Together, they've sold over 40 million records worldwide. That's quite something. And first of all, if I can ask you, Freddie, how did it all begin?
Oh, Freddie was extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. Yes, all of them. Queen were very, very intelligent guys. I think they'd all been to university, and they were very erudite and very calm, and they would consider things very carefully. You ask them a question, you could see them all sitting and thinking about it, you know, and they'd give an answer, and the answer was wonderful.
Yeah.
It required very little effort to interview them, because they were all so intelligent. They were really nice guys. I got a lot of time for Queen.
Well, that was the single that broke you, the Seven Seas of Rye, that began it all. Roger, why was there a little bit of Seven Seas of Rye on Queen 1 and then repeated on Queen 2?
Well, I think Freddie had half-written the song, and we thought it was a nice sort of tail-out to the first album. I think we had the idea of starting the second album with the song.
And I'm guessing that you didn't have to do that much preparation for these kind of programs because they were overseen by another titanic Radio 1 producer in the shape of Paul Williams.
With the Radio 1 producers, I didn't have to worry because they had coached me so meticulously on what I should ask them and made sure I knew what their music was. And I did for the most part. I was thoroughly groomed and prepared before I went in for any of those things. Mm-hmm. And I don't just mean an hour before, I mean like days before, weeks before. So I was absolutely up to speed when we went in, and I didn't embarrass anybody.
Oh.
That was good.
Next week, it's celebration time for Radio 1. Yes, Radio 1 is 10 years old, and the new Radio Times goes through the records to find out more about the personalities behind the 247 microphone.
In September 1977, you quietly acknowledged your fifth anniversary on Radio 1, and the network celebrated its first 10 years on the front cover of the Radio Times, which I have a spare copy of, by the way, if you need it. And you were also all pictured on the steps of a landmark building just around the corner from where we're sat right now, which you must remember.
I do. There had been one before that, which was
course,
the,
yes.
I think, probably the one in six, when the Pirates were
That's
shut
right,
down.
Yeah.
And they all sat around Langham Church on the steps there. So there had been one before. And this was simply a revisitation of that. But yes, I remember that. And I have got that cover. Thank you, Sean. I've got it. So it's kind of you to offer.
In Radio Times, John Peel writes about the last 10 years of rock. Star of the 2 o'clock spot each weekday afternoon, David Hamilton. And Paul Burnett, who talks about life on the road with the Radio 1 Roadshow. Britain's national radio DJ. With Noel Edmonds from 7 to 9 each weekday morning, and Kid Jensen joining the DJs on the cover of the new Radio Times to wish a happy 10th birthday to.
Now that's very interesting, because voicing that trailer was Simon Bates, who would replace you on the Top 20 only 6 months later. So when Derek Chinnery told you that you'd be coming off the programme, was that a complete surprise to you?
Well, let's just put it like this, Sean. I knew I couldn't be there for very long, because they got rid of Fluff because he was there too long. So I knew I didn't have very long myself. But the fact that I made it longer than a year, I was very proud of.
I've much enjoyed doing this show, as I'm sure with Simon Bates, who takes over the Top 20 from next Sunday onwards, so be sure to listen in.
I mean, you say that you weren't there for very long. You clocked up 5.5 years in the end, and you weren't quite finished with the BBC yet either. As you moved across the networks.
Much more music just for you.
The time on Radio 2 is 4:03. My name's Tom Brown. Hello and welcome to Much More Music.
They asked me to do a Radio 2 program, which I attempted, but I really wasn't very much into Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra. I couldn't quite get in with the same enthusiasm that I could for Dire Straits.
And this afternoon we've got some more gentle, easy music for you to soothe the savage breast from Jerry Rafferty, Cleo Lane, Colin Blunstone, Rod Argent, and the Robert Farnon Orchestra.
I parted company with the BBC and I went to an organisation down the road which was run by ITN, Independent Television News. They had an outfit called WTN. I got this job because of a Radio 1 guy called Dave Simmons. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, Dave.
When I talked to him one day in the pub and said, I can't really hack this Radio 2 thing anymore, he said, well, come and join WTN.
Right.
And so that was what I did. And into WTN would come all these extraordinary guys, and especially the cameramen. The cameramen seemed to all come from Hong Kong. And eventually, I said, I'm going to go out and talk to these guys because they're really, really interesting. It was a special kind of breed of these fearless people who went into all these strange, weird places that I'd never been to and wanted to go to. Mm. So I got myself out to Hong Kong.
Oh, that's how it happened.
And I started working for a company which was doing in-flight videos for Cathay Pacific.
Yeah,
they would be the
yeah.
footage, and I would simply be the presenter on that program. Anyway, I worked for that company about a year, and it went bankrupt.
Oh, no.
So that was the end of that thing.
Yeah.
And then I found a guy who said, he was called Vaughan Savage, and he'd worked on BBC World Service as a newsreader. And Vaughan said to me, why don't you go and talk to BFBS? Yeah. And they said, please, come. You know,
fantastic.
I said, really? Yeah, sure. Come and work for us. The camaraderie of all these Brits together in a strange land was something I'd never experienced before, and it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. BFBS made my, not my career, it made my life.
This is the British Forces Broadcasting Service in Hong Kong, transmitting on 99.5 megahertz on VHF and 1250 kilohertz in the medium wave band. Good evening. Until the Gurkha service comes on the air at 7 o'clock, we're now broadcasting the forces and their families in English.
That really took me right the way through to the handover. They handed over to the Chinese, and I thought, well, I'm going to stay on. And then I went and worked for the government radio station, which was called RTHK. BFES, of course, had to go. And then I was working for this radio television in Hong Kong, the government BBC equivalent, if you like. But it was never as wonderful as those last few years with BFBS. And then I retired. In Hong Kong, you have to retire at 60. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it must be a thing left over from colonial days in India. They figured that the heat, the malaria and everything else whacked you right out. So by 60, yes, you're pretty useless. So at 60, I retired, and that was it.
To Thailand.
And I retired to Thailand. Yeah. And it was a big wrench at first. Having had such an active life, I didn't know what to do with myself. But I had my Martin guitar, and so I went back to folk singing.
Back to folk singing.
And now in the car, when I'm driving along, I don't have a CD or anything on the playing while I'm driving. I sing. And I'm driving along the car singing folk songs to myself. That's my life.
And what a life story it's been. Tom Brown, thank you for not only sharing that with me, but also your complete Radio 1 story at long last.
Thank you, Sean.
We'll be right back.